Welcome everybody to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue number 3. You are back. This is the critical issue for actually most people, because if in the comic world, issue number 3 and 4 is when you like to say, all right, am I going to stay with it or am I not going to stay with it? So,
all the pressure.
Yeah.
That's the same way it is in TV too. I feel like most things have like a 3-episode intro to like really get in. It's like Firefly, you know. I watched the first 3 episodes of that and I was like not feeling it, and people were like just one
keep
more.
Keep it going.
Just one more after that.
I know.
So, this is episode 3.
Yeah.
Crux of life.
This is hopefully the one more for some people.
Yeah.
But some people are like already like fans forever for life. Like, all right, I'm always going to love, no matter what, I'm always going to love Capes and Scowls West. They can't do anything wrong.
Hopefully our review, you know, the 0.5 issues, that just sucked them in.
It just sucked them in.
So. Yeah. So, or any issue, you know.
Yeah.
Even our mysterious zero issues.
Oh, the zero issues. Out there.
I like how there's a plural on that. Zero issues.
Yes.
So let's pray for some zero issues.
Stop. It's too early. Too early now. Yeah, and I also want to give a quick shout out to my really good friend, Vanessa. She is a mother of 2 kids, and she, I don't think, reads comics. But she downloaded it and has added our podcast to her roster, so she's
Woo!
Listening.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to clap because I'm not sure if that's going to come up weird on my...
That's okay. Patrick did it just right.
Thank you. Hopefully.
Should we say who we are?
Yeah. So this is Leander. For those of you that don't know me, I don't know why you don't know me, but now you do. And I am one of the 3 co-hosts of the Capes and Scowls West. I'm one of the original co-hosts of Capes and Scowls Original? I don't know what you call those guys. And those guys, by the way, are Capes and Scowls, are on currently on episode 50, so feel free to listen to them.
Whoa, 50.
Yeah, congrats. Although that's not real because we actually had a ton of issues or episodes before. We got to episode 54 and our, site crashed. And so we had to start all over again. So, of course, it was 54, and everything crashed and rebooted, just like DC 54.
That would have been better. I was about to say, if it was 52, that would have been...
Right, that would have been
Spot
on.
Actually, super eerie. Wait, was it 52? It was, we did mention the 52 unit. Maybe it was 52.
That's creepy.
Yeah, it was pretty creepy.
Sweet.
The Watchmen are real.
All the nut clapping. I am Nat, one of the other co-hosts here at Capes and Scowls West. So, yeah.
Nice. And I am Patrick. I am not a co-host here. I just randomly busted into the room while we were recording, and I decided to say some words.
Mm-hmm. And we kept them.
Yep.
Really serendipitous, actually. Yeah. Like, I don't know how that worked out. But
mm-hmm. It turns out I was a burglar initially, and I came in to rob the joint, and then they showed me some comics, and I was like, oh, well, I decided to change my ways.
And we were like, Squirrel Girl.
Exactly. You just talked me out of my bad habits, and now I'm a reformer. Contributing individual in society.
We appreciate it.
It's the power of comic books there, everyone.
The power of comic books.
Yes, so if you are ever getting robbed at your house, quickly run to your long box and pull out your favorite issue of something and sit down with your assailant and read comics with them.
Yes, for those of you that don't know what a long box is, it is a box filled with comics. More or less.
Yeah, pretty much.
Specifically, long in length, as opposed to a short box, which is shorter in length.
So you can fit more comics as opposed to less comics.
Oh, that's awesome.
Alrighty.
Alright, we should move off of that. How's everyone doing? What's been going on? What's been smack-a-lackin'?
I have unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, I love my job. I've just been working a lot, so that's the key thing. I've been trying to catch episodes of Steven Universe on my phone while getting stuff ready throughout the day. So
yeah,
but that's really it for me.
We had the
Wonder Woman premiere, which we'll talk about later on. So that was wonderful as a premiere goes. But yeah, that's really all I've been up to. All
right.
Nice. Yeah, I've just been working a lot. I wrote two really interesting articles the past 2 days. One was about a movie, Tokyo Godfathers, which is a really good anime movie about, like, these three homeless people that find, like, this dumpster baby, pretty much. And so they, like, take care of it, and they become, like, this family.
Oh.
And what was really interesting about it was, like, one of the characters was, like, was transgender, and so there was this whole thing about, I don't know if you know, like, statistics on transgender homelessness. It's actually, like, a really, really sad and prevalent occurrence. Like, 40% of homeless people are transgender.
Mm.
And, like, compared to 5% of the population, which is LGBT.
Right.
So that's, like, a really, really... So I was, like, doing all this research for just, like, this 400-word review article.
Wow.
And just, like, really... And
now,
like,
people might be asking themselves, why are you writing anything about anything? Like, what makes you special that you can write stuff?
Oh, yeah, so I moonlight as a writer for an anime blog called World Without Horizons. It's anime, manga, news related to that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I do a couple articles per week for them, and it's a lot of fun. So
awesome.
I watch a lot of anime and manga, and so now, and I write a lot, and now I get to do both at the same time.
And read comics. Seems rough.
And read comics.
Life.
Darn. Hard knock life for Patrick.
It is. I know. You've embraced the geek culture.
I have. Yeah. I'm a full-on nerd, and loving every minute of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I was thinking as I was coming, because we talk a lot on the Capes and Scouts website and such of, like, geek culture or whatever, right? And it's so interesting. This is, like, this is not current. This is not, like, right now. It's been going on for a while. But it's that trend of people taking back words, right, that used to be so negative. And geek and nerd, like, you would never say, like, you would never admit that you were either of those things. And now it's a cool thing to be one of those, you know, one of those things.
Absolutely.
Like, even I remember when I was in high school and stuff, which was not too long ago. I mean, like, 6 years at this point. But, like, I had to defend myself because I was like, I'm a nerd and that's cool. And it's cool to be a nerd, guys. Everyone's, like, making fun of me for reading Lord of the Rings in the middle of class and stuff. And then... You know, a couple years later, they were like, oh, man, did you see that Lord of the Rings movie, bro? I was all like, oh, the dragons and stuff, and, oh, I think I'm pretty nerdy now. And I'm like, no, yes, but no.
Yeah.
It is a really strange paradigm shift to have geek culture just be pop culture.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
so 100%.
When you have a movie like Wonder Woman, which makes $100+ million in its opening weekend, that's not just the geek population going out and seeing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the geeks going to the movie 3 consecutive nights in a
row
on opening weekend. Every single time. Not just them, but you gotta love those people with, like, all your hearts. I only saw it 2 times, so I'm not one of those people. But
that's awesome. Yeah, actually, I had an experience just actually last week where, so I never had any issues with my dad and the whole idea of geek culture. I think he's the one that introduced me to it, even though he didn't know he did. And he called me the other day. He was like, so I'm watching Logan. Who is the guy who, like, doesn't like the sunlight and, like, he's, like, getting burnt? I'm like, that's Caliban. And I haven't given the whole explanation of Morlocks and what that was and how it all related. And so, like, he actually went out of his way to call me and talk about that, which
that's
is pretty cool.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, that is awesome.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a really interesting question too. Like, what is your earliest memory of, like, getting into geek culture?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can go around and talk about it.
Yeah.
That's what, definitely.
I already have an answer because I was thinking about it.
I think, and this is really strange, I think it's the Batman 66 TV series.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure I had to have watched that with my dad, like, on Nick at Night or something.
Mm.
Because I remember going to the premiere of Batman in 1989.
What?
So I remember seeing the movie. And this one, I was talking about my wife about this. I remember reconciling in my head, I was 5, I think, reconciling in my head that the suit was black always, like, even in the comic books, and that the coloring just wouldn't allow it and people couldn't understand, so that's why it looked blue and gray in the comics. Like, it's a really weird thing, but I think that's where Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's where it came from. Was that's the 66
Domino?
Yeah, which is strange because I definitely love more a darker Batman, mm-hmm. but I was brought up with that, and that's just bonfire. You know, it just kept going for me. So.
Yeah. Personally, I've like as far back as I can remember, I've always been reading fantasy novels. Mm-hmm. Like when I was in elementary school, I have memories of like getting in trouble during class for reading the Redwall series. Which is an amazing series, if any of you guys have ever read it. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, classic high fantasy, like, all the characters are, like, anthropomorphic animals. You got, like, mice and badgers, and, like, the bad guys are usually, like, rats, and there's, like, it's, like, medieval times, and they're, like, fighting with swords and stuff like this, but there's, like, 25 books in the series that, the guy who writes it, Brian Jakes, just has, like, his own universe going on in it that's just kind of nuts. And then, like, the first, like, real geek thing I can remember is, like, I don't do this for many shows, but when I was, even when I was younger, too, but I would come home from school just in time to watch Static Shock as it premiered TV. I love that show. I went back to watch it recently, too. Yeah. Still totally on point.
All right.
And it's just great. And it has, like, every now and then at the end of the episodes, it has, like, the, look, kids, there's lots of, the statistics show that 70% of American, I'm just making this up, but, like, lots of households have guns. And if you have, like, a child in your home, make sure that your guns are kept safe.
Wow.
And stuff. It was actually, like, some really heavy stuff. Like,
wow.
That's insane.
Yeah. Like, they had... Yeah, there's, like, some really, really heavy episodes. Like, there's a whole episode where, like, where Static goes to meet, like, Richie's dad, and he's all nervous, and Richie's dad is, like, super racist, like, outright.
What?
Like, it wasn't even subtle, like, how they do in most cartoons. Like, oh, I don't like that. He's, like, he's pretty much, like, is, like, get out of my house.
I mean, some of the older cartoons have more liberty to do more intense things than current comics to a certain extent.
That's because nobody was paying attention.
Yeah, nobody was paying attention at all.
Like, yeah, it seems well written.
Yeah.
Yeah, until the people like who are watching those comics or those shows grew up and they're like, look, we probably can't have an episode where like a kid shoots himself with their parents' gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh,
that's pretty intense.
Yeah. That's a little too on point for kids.
Yeah. I think for me, the thing is interesting. So back in the day, they used to have these like magazines, and you would have to buy these packs to get stickers to put them into the magazine to make some kind of picture or whatever. And mine was the Transformers, and I remember my dad just coming home and like just giving me packs, and I got so excited of like this idea of packs. And so that was my starting point. And so what it led to though was I had this massive, so no one knows about this. I shouldn't even tell you guys because you're going to try and rob me. I have this massive collection of comic cards that are just like pristine, whole sets collected, even though like worth nothing right now. But maybe one day, like, maybe one day.
Like the Marvel masterpieces?
Every single thing. Like all sets completed. Spider-Man, Marvel Universe 92 all the way through whenever they stopped doing them. It's intense.
You remember that, like, they had the power rankings on the back, so it's like...
Yep.
Blood type and all that.
And so I didn't even read comics really much before that, so my introduction to comics was reading all that information.
That's amazing.
About the characters.
So when you, like, actually got into comics, you were like, there's no way that this guy can beat this guy. Like, his power ranking is off the charts.
I know the numbers.
That's awesome.
So,
So that was pretty much it. So, yeah, it was interesting how that trended into my geek culture life.
Awesome.
Yeah. So,
that was really cool.
So, what's going on with news? What's happening in the world besides, I mean, there's only one really big one that matters, right?
Yeah.
Which is obviously Sense8 being canceled. The only one that really matters.
Okay. I need to rant for just a second.
Listen.
Here's my issue. Since Case of Scouts West has formed, three critical things have been canceled that we've like praised about on the show. first, it was Black Panther and the Crew.
Yeah.
And that's getting canned.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, I'm already reeling from that. Like, all right, you know what, though?
The issue after, like, 1 week after we talk about, we spend, like, 10 minutes just raving about it.
And then canceled. Marvel cancels it. So then, we're like, oh, you know what, let's move on past Black Panther and the Crew. Let's talk about new stuff. And let's talk about Netflix. Okay, so we have a whole episode dedicated to Netflix. And we rave about Sense8 and The Get Down. Right? Two fantastic shows. Fantastic shows.
So good.
And a week later, they get canceled. The news comes out that they're canceled.
And I'm still reeling from, because Sense8's kind of been on the chopping block for a while, just because
it's an expensive viewership show.
Yeah, because they film the whole show 8 times in 8 different locations.
That's a lot of money.
Around the world.
I'm
not. So it's been on the chopping block for a while. But I just heard about The Get Down right before we started. Leander told me the news, and I'm over here like, no. Ezekiel, how am I going to see your rise to eventually become books?
It was a sad. I know, you should cry more, because it's such a fantastic show, and I was so into it. And it's funny, because I've seen it all the way through the end, right? And I didn't know about the cancellation. But that's how I knew to check about the cancellation, because the ending, I was like, what kind of ending is this? And so Patrick hasn't seen it yet, so I'll let him see it for himself. But either way, no matter what, so all these things are getting canceled that we talk about and that we rave. It doesn't matter that they're getting canceled. You still should spend the time to get to know these things. So go pick up all the issues of Black Panther and the Crew. See why we're raving about it and see why it matters. Go watch The Get Down. Go watch Sense8 and make your own assumptions and biases or whatever. Because just because things are being canceled does not mean necessarily that they're bad things. It could be a multitude of reasons as to why. And some of them could be really good reasons. And some of them could be totally, who knows what, ridiculous, money, greedy, racist reasons as to why things are getting canceled. I don't know why things are getting canceled that I love. But I just know that they are getting canceled. Yeah. So, who knows?
Dang you, corporate America.
should we, like, use this as some sort of a weapon now? Like, should we gather and be like,
I mean,
you know, this comic is bad, so let's give it a praising review and talk about it for a while and just see if, man, we just wipe it out.
That would be...
Just get rid of it.
That would be totally nuts if we have that
power.
Yes. Yeah. And then... Well, I wonder if it'll work the opposite way, too. Like, stuff that we've said is bad. Like, especially your love and hate it. Like, love and hate it. Like, all the things you hate, and it's just, like, issue 100, like, 100 issues later.
It's like, why are you still around?
Nick Fury is still going on for some reason. Like, 100.
Couldn't even bring myself to read issue 2. Like, we talk about the 3 issue at the beginning. I couldn't get there. One was one and done on that one for me.
I think that'll be our litmus, is the Nick Fury. If it gets to 100, we know officially that we are screwed.
I give this book 5 Nick Furies.
5 Nick Fury. 5 Nick Furies versus 5 Black Panther Nick Furies.
Exactly. Our own rating system.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so anyways, that's my rant. Things are getting canceled that I wasn't happy about. But that's fine.
But there's a couple things I'm kind of excited for and coming up in TV shows, actually, this summer. So one is, I just heard about this like a couple days ago, but Stan Lee is actually producing and creating an anime series.
What?
Yeah, it's called The Reflection, and it's like an original superhero anime, and it's going to be premiering on July 22nd, actually.
That's interesting.
So it's super interesting.
Is it part of the Marvel Universe?
No, it's like its own standalone thing.
Maybe he's like done with Marvel Universe. Like, you know what? I need to start over again.
I think he just needs a new project is the thing. Because
how old is he?
Yeah, it was really interesting. He put out like this promotional video for it like a couple like weeks ago. And it's him like now. Like in his as old as he is, and he's like, this is gonna be a great Japanese cartoon.
I'm wondering how his like that 1960s writing style translates to anime. Like,
yeah,
that's really.
I think it's actually gonna translate very well if he has the proper team. There's definitely like genres out there that very much so reflect old, like, old-fashioned superhero cartoons and stuff. So I'm definitely going to watch it, check it out.
This is, like, going to be a weird comment, but I'm going to say it anyways because I don't care. I feel like I really want Stan Lee and Betty White to get married because they're my two favorite old people in the entire universe.
Why Betty White? I know, I can get Stan Lee, but why Betty White, Leander?
Well, why not? She's funny, she's awesome, she's old.
Yeah.
That's everything you want.
Fair enough.
And she was my grandma.
Yeah, right?
Did you ever see her, like, on the roasts?
No.
She's, like, one of the panelists on... Oh my gosh, it was the roast of someone. I want to say, like, Snoop Dogg or someone like that.
That makes sense,
like,
somebody.
Yeah. And, like, if you ever watch the roasts, it's, like, a lot of, like, rap, especially, like, rappers. There's, like, you know, Ludacris, and then, like Snoop Dogg, if he was not getting roasted, he's usually a panelist, and, like, all these people, and then, like, Betty White, and just, like, all these people.
She's got her pulse on pop culture, you know? Like,
she does.
Fair enough.
That was a weird tangent.
It was a weird tangent, but I had to take us there.
Yeah. That was a Leander Meander,
yep,
for sure.
Yeah, that was a Leander Meander.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Alright, so, any other news?
Just one quick one. Also, the Marvel's Secret Wars TV show is starting 17th of this month, and the only reason I'm excited is because, yeah, they're doing a Secret Wars TV show, and the reason I'm super excited for it is the promotional, like, 4-minute promotional clip, like, the first bit of the episode they put out, it pretty much takes place... around Miss Marvel's the main character of it, and I am so excited for it. It looks on point.
Is this an animated show?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Disney. Nice. Yeah, it's
like
Disney.
Good
XD.
Action based. Like, you can tell. It's like.
Yeah. So definitely some good action. Definitely, like, the subtle, like, little things in there for, like, people to pick up on thematically. Uh-huh. But this is just, like, a 4-minute clip, so we'll see rest of the 18 minutes
Miss
goes.
Yeah, Marvel.
Yeah.
Woo! It's awesome. Some spotlight.
I know.
Although now she's gonna get canceled. But anyways.
Oh, that's horrible. If that happens, I'm like...
I might be done.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out.
Shit. If we just cancel Ms. Marvel, I'm gonna cancel this whole podcast.
It's gonna be a complete rebrand at that point.
It will.
Oh god.
Yeah, sorry.
As far as news goes, I mean, we should talk about Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I think we should. Mm. We all saw it at the same time.
We did. That was a great premiere too. I don't know if you guys got to be there for all of the trivia, but I had a great time.
Yeah, that was drawn by Griffin.
Yep, Griffin, and I believe they're called the AMC Classic now. It was formerly the Carmike Cinemas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a great time. I mean, do we want to do our, like, a quick review?
Yeah, let's do a quick review.
I loved it. I think it was the movie I enjoyed the most this year. I don't know if I would call it the best movie of the year thus far in 2017. Logan is pretty high up there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they nailed Wonder Woman's character, and Gal Gadot, holy crap, she was fantastic in the role. I think it was a smart decision to make the Amazons sound like her. Because losing some of her comedic timing or her natural reactions to things would have been terrible.
Yeah.
The way that she was... Her cadence just worked. She felt really real. She felt smart. She felt powerful. Best action sequences. Potentially best fight scenes I've ever seen in a comic book film. I loved the slow-mo. I loved the intensity of each moment. And actually, in a conversation I had with my wife... I think they were trying to capture comic book panels. I didn't think about it during the film, which is great.
Interesting.
But in retrospect, there's a lot that if you think about the frozen image of her, you know, with the knee shield shot that goes through the building, it's cutting away like it was two panels. Like, the hit happens and you open, it's a two-page spread of the explosion and her flying out the window with him.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, like, those kinetic moments just frozen in time. I loved the movie. I thought it was what the DCEU clearly needed and what we needed as viewers. I wanted something brighter, and it was bright, and it was the Wonder Woman character. Has kind of a darker tone towards the end, but mm-hmm. I mean, he's dealing with the horrors of war, and mm-hmm. that you can blame war on whatever you want, but ultimately it's humanity that does this to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah, I loved, it's the first, like, real, like, DC and probably Marvel movie, too, that actually, like, builds up a thematic arc well over the movie and doesn't drop it once, like, all the action happens and, yeah, like, that towards right. the end of the movie. Like, I felt that with, like, I don't know, there's just a lot of examples I could go on now, but, like, the whole, like inner turmoil between man and, like, quite literally in Wonder Woman, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was just brought out so well. And I was thinking about, and, like, just the great undercurrent of feminism throughout the whole movie. I was thinking about the S.H.I.E.L.D. scene last night. There's one scene towards the beginning where an Amazon does, like, the S.H.I.E.L.D. thing, and another Amazon goes and jumps off her S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And to, like, fight the German, to do this really sweet sequence to fight the Germans. And then later on in the movie, when Wonder Woman's out in the real world, the same thing pretty much happens with mm-hmm. Steve.
And the crew.
Mm-hmm. And they pick up this, like, tank door, and he yells out, S.H.I.E.L.D., and she does, like, the whole... It's, like, the same thing. But what's really interesting about that scene is where it only took one Amazon to do that, to do the S.H.I.E.L.D. lift. It took four men to do the same exact thing.
I didn't pick up on that either. Yeah,
but exactly. It is an interesting point. So there's the suspension of disbelief in film where you have to submit yourself to the rules of the filmmaker and the rules of the world that is being set forth. And oftentimes, characters just sort of come out of nowhere and are, you know, they have all these high proficiency with fighting, or they, you know, they can do all these fanciful things.
Mm-hmm.
This movie set that up. The Amazons fought in a very specific way. So when you got to Diana being Wonder Woman, it was just a heightened sense of that. So it had just amped it to 11, what she was able to do, and none of it felt outlandish because it was like, no. That's what the Amazons do. Mm-hmm. They are that badass. She's just an exemplified version of that.
Right.
So.
Right. And she was using the same exact moves, like, in the beginning when in the training sequences when she's, you know, growing up on Themyscira and she's learning how to fight. She uses those exact same moves against the Germans later on in the film, too.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the real cut. So this is Leander's real deal about Wonder Woman, how I really feel. So you can tell me at the end if I loved it or hated it. So, first of all, the child actor for Wonder Woman, amazing.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Spot on. That little girl, hit it. She's going to be a star one day. That's me making my prediction. and then I really love the unity of the Wonder Women. the Amazons working together and fending things off. Here's my thing. I'm going to give you my few negatives because overall this movie was amazing. So my first negative is the biggest one, which is she chooses a specific kind of theme to kind of show that if you have this thing, the world will be saved. And what she chose, and I don't want to spoil it completely.
We may as well.
Okay, yeah, because it's not going to make sense otherwise.
Yeah.
But she chooses love. And don't get me wrong, love is a great thing, I'm sure.
if I ever experience it one day.
But it didn't seem right for me. I mean, it seemed a bit naive, which I get it. She's Wonder Woman. She's been on an island for a long time, so sure, she can be naive a little bit. But it's like, well, then how do you continue that theme further? Like, is she just always going to be in love all the time? Like, is that her thing? Like, whereas Hope, she could be hopeful all the time. She could be a symbol of hope all the time. Mm. She can't be a symbol of love forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't seem, it didn't feel like it's going to fit her long term.
I think that's the point, is she has that instance where she utilizes love as a point of strength, and it's what she sees in humanity, is that it's the love between humanity that will be able to drive humanity forward. But in Batman v Superman, she says that she had left man's world for 100 years.
Mm.
So there's a good thought that after the events of Wonder Woman, that's it. Mm-hmm. She doesn't step in again until BVS.
Right.
That could be, you may be right. It's like you can't carry that theme through for that length of time. It's having to come back and find maybe a new strength and hope.
Yeah. Yeah,
would probably be that.
And there might be even a better word. I just couldn't think of it at the time. Yeah. So, but yeah, overall, I thought it was fantastic. It was a great movie. I loved it. I think every single person should watch it, period. Man or woman, it doesn't matter. So.
Oh, absolutely. What did you think of the villain? I felt like that was, you know, in other reviews I've watched or read, the villains do come up as being a negative, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I can see where they would come across as a negative, but I don't care. Like, it was such a great... She was such a great character that they... She didn't even need a villain. It almost like you didn't even need a villain.
No.
Because the war was the villain by itself. And the extra characters, these extra things that you had to fight, were just extra, like... That's like the cherry on top. It's like the extra little, you know, sprinkles or whatever. But it's not the main thing.
Yeah. There were a couple of other things that I found really interesting. One was... And this was retrospect. The fact that the gods, the Greek gods, were introduced in this, and it was just, the Greek gods existed. They were here. They, you know, will be back at some point. It was like, what? This didn't get explained away? Like, there wasn't some sort of, like, pseudoscience to it? It was like, no, these were the Greek gods. This was, you know, Zeus, Ares. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
It
so I found that to be really, really interesting. And then they went against the... The tournament, like the championship that is what brings the ambassador out of Themyscira. That wasn't done in this story. Like, it was so much quicker paced, and it was Diana just deciding, I need to go. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to be the ambassador and be the defender of this world.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, because in almost every origin story that I can think of for Wonder Woman, there is that tournament aspect to it. So that the fact that wasn't there, I thought it was a really interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you have, like, this whole kind of, like... I don't know if this was purposeful or not, but it has a whole, like, American isolationism to it, in which, you know, Themyscira, all the Amazons are kind of going back and forth about whether or not they should enter the war, pretty much. And then... Once they do enter the war, I mean, that's more World War II kind of stuff. But yeah, I thought that was a little interesting, like a little subplot there.
The only thing, that I really didn't like, and actually another thing about it, like, I was so upset when it happened, actually. I didn't think about it until just now. Or I tried to block it out of my mind. I didn't like, and I'm not going to spoil anything, that one of her weapons didn't work. It really pissed me off for some reason.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what it was, but it's like, it was, I was hoping that she would use it, and I was hoping that it would work, and the fact that they're just like, this little, whatever, I don't care about this.
And I'm the total opposite of that.
Yeah.
Loved that moment because I had, from the beginning of the film, predicted that moment.
Really?
As I was watching, I'm like,
in the world?
I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here. But we should also, or I want to talk about, the lasso was fucking amazing. I was like, I am such a fanboy about the accoutrement in these films. Like, when Batman doesn't use batarangs in movies, it drives me up a wall. That's what he's supposed to do. So the lasso was a whip. It was the lasso of truth. It was used as a deflection device. It was amazing. And it glowed.
Yeah, it was definitely really cool. It kind of seemed like they were taking a more, like, magical approach to her lasso as opposed to it just being, like, this, like, piece of rope. Like, the physics in that movie were really good. I mean, aside from the fact that she could jump, you know, over tall buildings in a single bound. But the actual physicality of the the universe that she was in was still pretty much on point. And so the lasso, though, had a couple scenes in it where it was, like, doing some stuff that was more, like, will-based as opposed to, like, just a piece of string that
Doctor Strange's cap.
cape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I think it needed to be. I do feel like that had to be, it had to feel like it was something more, especially when, you know, because I don't know if they ever refer to it as the Golden Perfect or the Lasso of Truth. They give it a different name in the film. But,
yeah, I can't remember exactly.
But his description of it, like, he was being, when Steve Trevor was, like, he was being burned by it, in addition to, like, feeling overwhelmed, it was, like, physically hot around him. And I thought, there was just a lot of subtle things that they did in this movie that was just, it felt like a comic book. It felt right.
Yeah, it felt really good. They did a great job with that, so kudos.
Kudos.
Yeah.
Go see Wonder Woman if you haven't already seen it.
Yes, please do.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of, actually, and I don't think either of you guys read the new Superman, but they have the Chinese Wonder Woman in it, too, and her Lasso of Truth is very much so, like, an extension of her, like, mind.
Kind of.
Uses it, and so I was like watching this, and I was like, "Oh man, they're kind of building up that Lasso of Truth kind of thing for this." Oh man, I would die of happiness if they made a new Superman movie.
Oh, that would be. I think that'd be cool as an animated film. Actually, that would be really interesting.
It would be. It definitely would be.
This could be an animated, like an anime. Actually, would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, sure. It would be. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So going off of Wonder Woman, I did not know that this movie about Wonder Woman's creator was existing or was being made. So I was doing some research, and there's a movie coming out, I think it's later this year even, called Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. And it is starring, this is pretty interesting, Luke Evans as William Moulton Marston, creator of Wonder Woman, Rebecca Hall as Elizabeth Marston, his wife, and Bella Heathcote as Olive Byrne, their mistress, their lover. And she has been said in the past, and it'll be interesting what this movie portrays, that in many ways she was the inspiration for Wonder Woman. That she actually wore specifically a pair of bracelets that became, you know, the bracelets of Wonder Woman. So
interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know this movie existed, though.
I didn't know that they were so kinky like that. But at the same time, I do get the whole, like, original Wonder Woman depowered by getting tied up.
Yeah.
Might be part of that.
Apparently, that's something that definitely came from real life.
Yeah.
Personal preferences was the getting tied up part of it.
There's some, like, Professor Marston has children with both women.
Wow.
Really?
And Rebecca, his wife, actually named one of their children Olive.
Wow. So that was intense.
Yeah, so
that
this
was a real situation.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in this film now. Yeah. I, for one, I love Luke Evans. I think he was the best Zeus I've ever seen on film in anything.
Yeah.
Just the weird portrayal that he had in Immortals, which, say what you will about that movie, he was amazing in it. I didn't know this existed. So coming across this after, you know, being in such a Wonder Woman high after the movie, I was like, whoa, well, this sounds cool. And there's just a really, really quick teaser out that's more voiceover than anything else. But, yeah, something to look out for on the horizon. It's like, that's a definite story I want to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
He was a really interesting guy. I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
For those of you who were at Trivia, inventor of the lie detector.
Yes, that was pretty cool as well to hear. So maybe we should get into comic reviews. I think each of us at least have one thing that we want to do. So this is a chance where the three of us are going to jump into something to educate our viewers, listeners, to help them better understand what's going on in the comic book world. So that's what we do. We come to educate you, and maybe you'll get interested and want to go pick something up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'll start because this is, again, jumping off of Wonder Woman. So I have a trade here. Is it a trade? No, what do you call it?
Standalone. It's a standalone. We have it in the trade paperback section here at Griffin Games and Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Call it a trade.
We'll call it a trade for now.
A trade event book,
yeah. So if you want to go into comic books, any comic book store, but hopefully you'll go to Griffin Games and Comics at 1119
West Drake Road.
West Drake Road.
Unit C30, 80526.
Bam.
Fort Collins, Colorado.
There's a trade here called Love is Love. And I think it's been out maybe for a little bit, right? It's not completely brand new.
Yeah, it's... I want to say it's like... No, I think it's like three or four months.
Really?
Yeah.
So it is basically... And I'm going to read the cover is Love is Love. And the cover says, a comic book anthology to benefit the survivors of the Orlando Pulse shooting. And I remember seeing it at the counter. And I was like, oh, cool. What is this? And it happened to be that Nat was there. And he was explaining that, oh, it's a, you know, a benefit book. And he was like, yeah, and it's rough, man. You gotta be in the right place. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy behind the counter doesn't know what he's talking about.
What does he know, this guy whose job it is to sell comics?
And, so Love is Love is a series of short comics and pinups and everything else that relate to LGBT culture as it relates to the Pulse nightclub shootings and kind of what happens afterwards and the feelings that you might be feeling. And, you know, even in the very beginning, which I don't think I even noticed it in the very beginning, it was like the list of everyone that died in the Pulse nightclub shooting. So that was one thing, just to have their names and their ages. And they're really interesting because the ages matter. Like, to see how young these people were that were killed. I mean, everyone was in their, like, mid-30s or younger. There's a few that are, you know, 40 or so, or older, but just a couple. So it just shows you, like, wow, we just lost a ton of youth in America, and this is a real issue. What we discovered this morning, because I went to grab the book again, is that Patty Jenkins does the introduction. The director of Wonder Woman literally is on the front page, and I don't think anyone probably even knew who that was. It probably didn't even register to anyone who Patty Jenkins was, but now, though, looking at this again, it gives it a whole different kind of meaning after Wonder Woman. I'm already getting emotional just, like, getting into the first couple of pages.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic book. One of the reasons I bring it up, and one of the reasons I decided to bring it up today, is that I lent it to my friend Vanessa, and she triggered my remembrance that I should probably talk about it at some point in time. The reason I gave it to Vanessa, it was because it was too hard for me to read. I was like, I can't only get through halfway through this. I can't even have this in my house right now. So I gave it to them and explained to them, you know, to her and her husband, like, this is what it is, this is what's going on. You guys might want to be interested in reading it and finding out more about what's going on. And it was just, I cried multiple times, and it made me so mad. Like, I was like, why am I getting so angry? But of course I'm getting angry, and of course I'm sad. Yeah. So, Love is Love. Go pick it up. If your comic book store is not currently, has this book, demand that they have it so that you can have it and read it and share it. Share it with everyone. Make other people read it, because while it is upsetting, you have to deal with those emotions. I mean, otherwise, you're going to ignore it, and it's going to be a thing that happens in 2 or 3 years where, like, everyone's forgotten about the fact that it even happened.
Yeah.
I told you.
Why? Darn you. Why didn't I listen to that guy behind the counter?
it
was worth it.
Yeah. And I feel like that incident especially is, like, the perfect storm of all these different things happening in our society right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the fact that it was a gay nightclub, the fact that the guy who did it was a Muslim,
mm-hmm.
The fact that, like, all these, like, it was also Hispanic night,
yep.
too, at the club at
mm-hmm.
the time, so there's
yep.
that whole thing, you know, guns, like, literally every hot topic
mm-hmm.
that's going on right now in our society was pretty much, like, a whirlwind
yeah.
into this one horrific incident.
Yeah, it brings up a lot of issues in the LGBT culture community about, you know, was enough done in the aftermath, right? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Would it have been, the responses would have been different if it wasn't Latino night and if it was, you know, just a normal night where it's majority white people there? Would that have changed how things and how Americans were impacted and felt the impact of this? Because some people might have been like, all right, LGBT, I'm not normally into that sort of stuff, but this is a big issue, I'll get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're all Latinos? Maybe now I'm not as into it, you know, it's not as important to me now. You know, people, I think one of my favorite comments, but, like, someone's was like, yeah, my child could have been there. I'm like, no, actually your child probably wasn't going to be there, because you have a white child who probably, like on Latino night is majority just Latino and people of color. Mm-hmm. So your child actually wouldn't have been there. So don't try to absorb like fully that experience could be something that your child experiences. This is a special night for people who are already or are marginalized within the LGBT community who need a night especially for them to get together because normally they're not represented. So it just continues to feed on other things. So, but at the same time, you know, don't discredit the fact that, yes, if your son or daughter is LGBT and they're white, doesn't mean this doesn't matter to them. But I think it does, I think it helps to bring forth the intersectionality, that discussion, right, of you, LGBT is every single person, every type of person. It's not like LGBT is just a white thing or LGBT is just, you know, whatever. Or it's a feminine versus male or more masculine thing. So that this happening to a group of people was just a horrible thing. So anyways, go get Love is Love, because I'm not trying to get all the way deep into this conversation right now about it. But it's, I think, force yourself to read it. Educate yourself. Live outside of ignorance and just learn about what's going on.
Mm. Amen.
Mm-hmm. Word.
It's hard to follow that.
Yeah, that was like, I've actually changed the order of the things I'm going to review now because of that. So I'm gonna stay within our theme of love and Wonder Woman, and I'm gonna jump into Wonder Woman Annual number one, the 2017 annual. This is an anthology book. It's a bunch of short stories starring Wonder Woman. The main story is by Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott, which was the even numbered teams of the Rebirth Wonder Woman storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. I have to say kudos to DC Comics for having something out on shelves that people can go and grab right after they see the movie.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
But this was, it centers around, the main story of the anthology centers around the meeting, the first meeting of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And at this point in time, Wonder Woman barely speaks English.
Oh.
She speaks some form of Greek, kind of the Amazonians have their own language in this.
That's cool.
So she uses the Golden Perfect and refers to it as the perfect image. I love that. To communicate with Batman and Superman and to show their intentions because she doesn't have time for this shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's not going to stop. And there's some really funny moments. So one of the ones, and I'm going to spoil this stuff because I don't really care.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, go read the comics already.
So, right now.
Pause.
Yeah, and go read.
Read it, and then go see how you feel about Nat's review of it.
The rope is translating between them all. So they all hold the rope and basically just say their names. And so she says, Diana of Themyscira, daughter of Queen Hippolyta. Superman goes, Clark Kent, Kal-El, and Batman says, Batman. So there you go on that line, you know, as a huge Batman fan. Like, that's a perfect situation.
Uh-huh.
But then later on, after Wonder Woman leaves, it's just Superman and Batman talking. And I'm gonna read off this again.
Yeah.
You think it's a trick that she's lying, says Superman. Batman says it wasn't a trick. Then why are you upset? We saw what was in her heart, and she saw what was in ours, Clark. We've got a lot of catching up to do.
Oh.
So, there's many ways you could take that. The way I took it was Batman, this righteous character, this person who believes he's doing things for the right reason, saw a glimpse into Wonder Woman's heart and realized how far behind he was.
Mm-hmm.
And
we have a lot of catching up to Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Yes. And not only Batman, but he said we. Which means that even Superman, because Batman, you know, he definitely has his moments where he kind of walks the razor's edge. Superman, on the other hand, doesn't really ever...
No, he's supposed to be pure hope.
Yeah, exactly. And so the fact he said we have some catching up to do, which means Wonder Woman is just... so out of their league as far as like righteous justice goes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I thought that was a poignant moment. It's beautiful too. I mean, that's one. This is one of the short stories. There is a Trial of King Shark is another. This one was very different for me. I actually really enjoyed it. Only probably because King Shark was in Flash recently. So it was a character that was once again familiar to me. This one was cool. And it's about, it's a really pause, stop, and listen was the theme. Make sure that in situations that are difficult, we stop. Mm-hmm. Slow down. Take a moment to listen to what's really happening.
Hmm.
That one was good.
Which is, yeah, people need to do that more.
Yeah, and I feel like King Shark is a good example because he just looks like such, like, obviously he's menacing. The villain. Obviously, right. Whatever he's done is yes. bad because he's a giant, like, 20-foot tall anthropomorphic shark. There's no way that yeah. he's done anything that's remotely good.
Yeah, and just looking at you flipping through the pages, I like that there's different Wonder Woman outfits.
Yeah. Hmm. It's all based on the Rebirth look, but yeah, each artist interprets that just slightly different from one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then the use of the cloak, because she's in a cold setting. The third story, awesome as well. It's about honor and duty and sometimes... duty. Hey, now. Sometimes having to do the wrong thing because it's the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think tying Wonder Woman to a character of war as well as being a character of love.
Yeah.
And then the last story, which was just super, super fun, is Wonder Woman having to defend a kaiju. And it's actually called The Last Kaiju, and wow. it's so, like, once again, stop, listen, and take mm-hmm. a moment to think, because if a monster would appear in our world like that, maybe they just don't know what the hell's going on. So, but definitely check out this book. This was a great, great little... out of continuity, in continuity, whatever mm-hmm. side story setup, and it's beautiful. The four different art styles really work well. They're mm-hmm. they're fun. They're different to look at, and the read was good. It was quick.
Nice Wonder Woman annual.
Yep. Nice. That sounds really good. So I guess to continue our female theme, this is one I didn't think I would ever actually review, but we got Gwenpool number 16.
I'm shocked that you even picked that up.
Okay, here's like a little guilty pleasure of mine. I've been reading Gwenpool since issue 1.
No!
Nice. Yes.
I know too much.
Oh, I know. I feel like I just flashed everybody in the room here. yeah, I was just walking around with one of those trench coats on and open it up and Gwenpool is on the inside. So it's definitely a guilty pleasure of mine. So one of the reasons I didn't think it's pretty much like a better version of Deadpool mm-hmm. in my mind. So for those of you that don't know, Gwenpool is kind of part of Marvel's now sort of rebirth thing when they're introducing a lot of new characters. Everyone is just like, oh, she's just like the chick Deadpool. Started off as like a sort of one like. Little back of the book lols and Howard the Duck
mm-hmm. gotcha.
And she, you know, lots of fans are like, let's get more. So her whole backstory is she's actually from our world. She's a human from this dimension that we live in, and because of Secret Wars and all the dimensions colliding together, she falls into the MCU, and being an avid comic geek, she knows it's the MCU. She promptly gets herself a costume because that's the only way to have significance in the MCU. And her superpower is she has this nerd knowledge of everything Marvel.
Stop
so she
it.
Knows people's.
I have no idea.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
Darn
actually.
It, I want
Doesn't
it, now.
It actually sound good? So she knows, like, she fights Jane Foster as Thor, and she knows that she's Jane Foster, and that's how she gets Stop. Her to not destroy her with the hammer. Is she. Shouts out Jane during the middle
wow.
of their fight.
Wow, she
and
knows
this,
too much.
And she does. And so she knows everybody's weaknesses. She has a meetup with Deadpool, which actually turns out to be really, like, intense. And you'd think that, like, they'd have this, oh, you're, like, the little Deadpool version.
Right.
But, no, she doesn't have any powers, by the way. That's her only thing.
Wow.
Is she gets trained by Bat-Rock to be, like, a decent fighter. And
okay.
she just has...
Bat-Rock the Leaper. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that one more time.
Who that is.
Bat-Rock the Leaper.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he's an OG Captain American villain.
Mm.
And so, yeah, there's a point in the beginning where she joins MODOK, the mercenary organization, and so she gets, like, a bunch of guns and swords, pretty much. But moving on to this issue was actually what I've kind of been looking for as a fan of Gwenpool. We have, so on the cover is actually her reading her own comic.
Oh my god.
So it's super meta. Uh-huh. It's really, and it's not just like a Deadpool thing where he like looks at the camera and is like, here's a joke.
Right.
She just says stuff that's like, we're obviously in the comic universe. So, like, she meets a cop at one point and is like, tell me your name. And the cop is like, why? And she's like, because that's the rules, so we'll meet again later. So, obviously, that's coming back.
That's awesome.
But so, in this issue, she actually gets sucked back into her world. So, this is our world. And it gives us, and she kind of forgets a little bit of everything that happens for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really interested in this, but we get this view of her as a teenager who's pretty much, like, dropped out of high school. She just plays, like, video games all day and reads comics. But she has, like, the millennial struggle thing going on. So, like, her parents are like, you know, you're just so privileged and lazy, get a job. And she, like, it's kind of a joke, but she's like, if you want a waitressing job, you have to have 2 years of waitressing experience in New York City. And where am I going to get that? Like, go to Jersey and get a waitressing job there? Like, an intern as a waitress or something? And then, there's just all these things, like, since she dropped out of high school, like, all of her friends are going off to college, and they've, like, left her behind, and she's kind of, like, sitting here with all this sort of, like, weird guilt of, not guilt is the right word, but sort of stuck in life and looking for something else, and she writes fanfic as sort of a way to escape this life. And actually, she has a great confrontation with her dad at one point over the dinner table, and it actually gets really emotional for, like, a surprisingly, like, lighthearted book. And she's talking about, like, oh, I want to write this fanfic, but I haven't really committed to the idea yet. And he's like, I knew it. Even something you care about, like writing, you can't even do. And she's just like, it's not the writing. It's about the escapism. And so to her, like, all this is just trying to find, like, some meaning in life and, like, putting herself at the center of this universe is... And then, like, her dad is like, oh, yeah, tell me how awful your, like, cushy life is, that you don't pay, like, rent, you, like, live at home still. And for anybody that still lives with their parents, which I know plenty of people, it's not just a cushy life because you live with your parents. And getting into some really interesting stuff. It still has a bunch of lols. Right. Like, at the end, she's... like, the worlds are combining, and there's the end thing, and she's actually picking up the words, the end, and then sees the, like, the to be continued over in the side, and
stuff like that.
So there's still, like, the lulls, but it definitely gets a little heavy in the middle.
Yeah. Oh, I had no idea about her background story at all, and that makes me interested.
Like, that all of a sudden sounded really, really cool.
There was a big eye roll while I said that.
Yeah, so Leander's eyes literally rolled out of his head. It was so intense. But yeah, so actually, like, really interesting background, and the arcs are pretty good. She just, like, says these, like, superhero things a lot. Like, of course, this is how her appearance in Champions number 4, I want to say it is. It's early.
It was just for, like, a half second.
Yeah. It was just one issue, and her appearance in Champions actually was super on point too. They use her as this great sort of, like, audience avatar for what's happening in the MCU.
No, actually, I think I was moving during that time frame. I don't have that issue.
Gwenpians? That's the cover.
No, it is. Really? Yeah, no. Like, the champ is, like, crossed out,
yeah,
and Gwen is written on it.
I knew I was missing something.
Oh, man.
I don't have that issue.
It's just a one-off.
I'll look for it. All right, cool.
But definitely check that out. It's really good.
Cool.
I definitely want to hit another review here.
Yeah, knock it out.
So, I am going to review Star Wars Darth Vader, number one.
Can you do this whole thing in, like, a Darth Vader voice? This whole review?
No.
Okay, yeah. Just like... stop. He's kind of like Gollum.
Yes, Gollum!
I was actually trying to do a Palpatine Gollum. Right there.
Yeah, that like, was total okay. Gollum.
Unlimited power! Sorry.
Yeah, Palpatine is my favorite. Senator Gollum.
Senator Gollum.
I'm okay with that. I think Palpatine is the best character in the prequel. I think he was the most interesting and the best acted character because he was over the top. Mm-hmm. So speaking of which, Star Wars Darth Vader number one, this is actually a mini series. It's by Charles Soule and Giuseppe Comicoli, who I just like saying his name.
Giuseppe is a great name.
Well, Comicoli, that's amazing. Great last name too. But this actually starts off at the moment of Revenge of the Sith's end. This starts with... it starts with Vader finding out that Padme has died. And it fixes the dreaded no and turns it into a poignant no. Mm. It's a very unhappy and reactive Vader, and he actually uses the Force in such anger that he throws Palpatine back at, you know, the machinery, the walls. Mm. And this immediately continues this, and it's more powerful and more... You see the intensity of the anger between these two characters and Palpatine trying to get Vader immediately to start using that anger and to fold himself darker, deeper into the dark side. But then you immediately get a quick turn, and you realize Palpatine is no slouch. This wasn't like... this wasn't a small moment for him. He was pissed that Vader threw him back. He immediately force lightnings him and threatens him. And basically, never do this again. Or, okay, I'm going to read this. If you touch me with the Force again, I will finish what Kenobi could not. Ooh. With lightsaber at Vader's throat. And we're not talking Hayden Christensen. We're talking black helmet and cloak Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the story begins basically with the Empire showing the Jedi are gone and praising the fact that the Jedi are gone and that they were corrupt. But the motivations for Vader is that he is a Sith. It is part of his training and his lineage to have a lightsaber. Well, his lightsaber was taken by Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. Palpatine says, that was not your lightsaber, that was Anakin's lightsaber, that was the lightsaber of a Jedi.
Interesting.
You need a Sith's lightsaber. Mm. And it explains the red, which has been talked about in novels now, but why Sith have red lightsabers is... Am I okay spoiling for you guys? I don't know how much I've read the Star Wars lore. Mm-hmm. They physically... They talk of the kyber crystals as being alive. So the whole idea is that a Sith will take the lightsaber of a fallen Jedi and they will remove the kyber crystal and they will force their will upon the kyber crystal until it bleeds. So it will physically change the color to red, a beautiful crimson. So this is basically Palpatine dropping off Vader and saying, go. This is your quest.
Wow.
You are now a Sith. Go make a name for yourself.
Wow.
So it is Vader sans lightsaber having to wreck some shit.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does.
He can still do it.
Man, I loved this issue. I'm a Star Wars nut as it is, but being able to monster Vader, movie monster Vader is some of the best villainy you could, you know, in cinema.
Yeah.
So seeing Monster Vader first get pushed over, which was great. Seeing Palpatine be like, no, you're still my apprentice. And then seeing him get to go full out. And this is only issue one. I cannot wait to continue reading this. This actually comes out the day that we're recording this. So
wow.
I got a little sneak preview here.
Nice. Well played.
Loved it.
All right. Well, I guess we should wrap up here. Hope you guys enjoyed this issue of Capes and Scales West.
West, West,
And we also hope that you continue to pull us and put us in your bin, because this is an important issue for you.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate it. All right, say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.